Species.
Unite.
Species. Unite.
So it's a very expensive process. It has a lot of inefficiencies, and a lot of those costs are due to failures. I think we are at the point where so many of these methods have shown in studies to be more predictive for humans that it really is an issue of human health. We need to do better for patients. We know we can and that these methods exist, so we need to use them.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We'd like to thank Lush for sponsoring today's episode. Lush advocates for people, animals, and the planet. Through their ethically sourced ingredients and their grants program, they give back locally and around the world. This past season, we have focused quite a bit on animal research and experimentation. And a lot of our focus has been really on just how bad it is for the animals, how bad it is for science, and how bad it is for taxpayers who are spending so much money on this stuff. What we haven't focused enough on are solutions, and there are solutions. There are so many human-relevant methods that are there to replace animal testing, and many more on the way. So today's conversation is with Elizabeth Baker. Elizabeth is the Director of Research Policy for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're a nationwide organization of physicians and laypersons that promote preventative medicine, they conduct clinical research, and they advocate for more effective, efficient, and ethical medical research, product testing, and training. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
You just tell us what you do and give us a little background on PCRM.
Yes, absolutely. So I am Elizabeth Baker. I am leading a team of just rock star professionals that are working to improve science by making it more relevant to humans and moving away from animal use. And we do our work at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. We're a nonprofit. We have been around since about 1985, and we are working for more effective and ethical research, testing, and training. We are located in Washington, D.C., and we've got about 1 million members and supporters nationwide. Our staff is comprised of scientists and lawyers and policy professionals that are advocating for use and further development of human-specific approaches and away from animal use.
Human relevant methods exist. They're all over the place, but we're not really using them very much yet, are we?
It depends on what you're looking to do. And so they are used a lot in, for example, in medical training. If you are studying emergency surgery, rather than stabbing or burning pigs, you can use human simulators instead. And they're already being used quite a bit. They are called simulators because they simulate human anatomy. So not only are they replacing animal use, but they're also improving medical training. And one example for this is what's called the cut suit. It's worn by an actual actor. It has internal organs and breakable bones and a heart that pumps fake blood through veins and arteries. And so that way, an actor puts on this cut suit that's very realistic and is able to act out an injury so that people are able to get more relevant experience in what to do when dealing with these issues, like, say, as medics. And they can be used repeatedly over time, and they've been found to be much more cost-effective. And so those are being used quite a bit. When it comes to other things like toxicity testing, there are a lot of new approaches that have been commercialized. Some are being used, but some have a ways to go before they're really going to be implemented in a way that I think will greatly improve testing and reduce animal use. And the reasons that these methods, which are like computational approaches or advanced in vitro approaches, are not used is really not so much the science, and it's more so issues with policy. So policies exist that have been around since well before science progressed and these methods became available. And so they didn't really think through how to be flexible to ensure that these approaches can be used. And so policy change is a big factor in getting new methods used. There are, you know, a lot that have been developed, but there are also a lot more in development. And so just scientific support for these is really important. And that could mean things like funding, but it could also mean program support. For example, at a federal agency who has accepted a non-animal method for decades, well, they're really, until recently, there really haven't been pathways for these new methods to be integrated into decision making. And so we worked for several years, and Congress worked on this too, and FDA worked on this, and FDA did end up launching what is now called the iStand program, where a company can work with FDA to evaluate the science and to get a clear stamp of approval from the agency that that method can be used in that circumstance. Because animal tests have been used for so long, companies really need that kind of certainty around acceptance in order to have the confidence to use new approaches.
Will you give some examples of tests that we're still doing on animals, but we do have human relevant options that are probably a lot better?
A couple of examples come to mind. One is, to look at skin irritation of a substance, the way that we've been doing it for many years is to put an animal, to restrain an animal, to shave them, and to put test substances directly on their skin to see what happens. And then we hope that if something was indeed harmful to the animal's skin, that it would be meaningful for humans. Well, there is a model that exists today. It's been commercialized. The FDA has actually already accepted it in some instances, called reconstructed human epidermis. So essentially, it's a human tissue model that was grown in the lab from human skin cells, and it captures the essential parts of human skin, and it allows scientists to test directly on that lab-grown human skin tissue whether a substance is going to be harmful to human skin before then that that substance would move into testing in humans.
Is anyone using it now?
We were able to find that actually in some instances, companies are using this reconstructed human epidermis model, but in other instances, they're not. And I think a big reason that that they're not is because we need clearer communication that companies can do that. And so FDA really can take on a leadership role in terms of integrating these approaches by being very explicit in communication with industry, both written and in meetings, that FDA will accept those methods.
When this happens, like something new gets invented, or, you know, there's a whole new solution that doesn't involve an animal and it involves human relevant methods, are people trained? How does that work?
Well, training is not automatic. Training is something that I think agencies are really trying to, agencies actually have all identified training as something that is essential to adoption of new methods. But I think different agencies are in different places with it. I think the EPA is really trying to provide training in any method that that their reviewers might see. I think the FDA is starting to host these internal trainings as well, but our organization actually has our own. It's called New Approach Methodology Use for Regulatory Application, or NURA, and the whole point of it is to provide that training. And so we have consistently, we're offering free training And we have hundreds of people at every virtual training who are there to learn about the latest methods and to understand how they can be used.
I would think too that a lot of scientists and, you know, doctors, researchers, they want this stuff, right? Like they're waiting for it.
There are a lot of very good reasons to do this work of moving away from animal use that center on human health and scientific innovation. And it's not just about saving animals, although that is really important too.
Are there areas where, like, we are nowhere near human relevant methods?
Nothing that's coming to mind for me.
Good.
But I am so in my world, yeah, right, of toxicology. But I think people love to say, we're never going to replace animal testing, but I don't know why they think they can see the future and why they would want to limit what science can do.
I would hope science is going to replace most, if not all, animal exploitation and torture to begin
with.
Now,
you know, I think we are at the point where so many of these methods have shown in studies to be more predictive for humans that it really is an issue of human health. We need to do better for patients. We know we can and that these methods exist, so we need to use them.
Sure. Okay, you're going to give another example.
Another example is organ chips or organs on chips. So these are models that are engineered to mimic the structure and function of human organs. And then you can use these models to test medicines instead of using animals. There was a really great Forbes article that came out about a year ago, and it was by the CEO of a company named Emulate. And he describes a study they conducted where they looked at 22 drugs that were known to be toxic in humans because they resulted in 208 patient deaths and 10 liver transplants. The researchers concluded that human deaths could likely have been avoided had the human-based liver chip been used, because the chips showed the clear signs of liver toxicity. And so this is something that animal tests in multiple species failed to show, and that's why those drugs moved forward into human testing and ended up killing and severely damaging many people. And so, you know, when you read about these studies, you really realize that there's so much more to this issue, and we really need to integrate these human-specific methods as much as possible because they provide better information.
I mean, I've heard organ on a chip for a long time, but what actually is it?
It's a small device. In many cases, you can fit it in the palm of your hand, and it's about the size of a USB, where you have human cells that a lot of times originate from human skin. They're reprogrammed to grow into other human organs, and they are seeded along with other things into these little chips. And so they are mimicking the structure and the function of a human organ. And so, for example, a heart chip will actually beat. You'll actually see as it grows, you'll see the thump thump of the heartbeat.
That is so cool. So for these kind of tests, like the one you just talked about with the liver organ on a chip, are we now shifting toward that, or are we still testing on animals for that?
Companies are definitely shifting toward it. There are tons of smaller innovator companies that are developing these organ chips. There's also a lot of big pharma companies who are developing them. It's also coming from the National Institutes of Health, the National Center for Advancing Translational Sciences runs a program for organ chips or tissue chips or microphysiological systems, as they're referred to when they're all linked together. There is so much happening actually in this space. Some have been commercialized and are being used by pharma companies, but it's earlier in decision making, and they're still doing the animal studies because they're not certain that the FDA is going to accept these methods in lieu of the animal test. And so that's why these other factors like policy change and training are so important when you have a technology that is ready to go.
Okay, I did not realize like that people are doing both. So they're kind of doing both at the same time?
It depends so much, always. It depends. But it depends. So some companies, I think a lot of companies are using them very early in the pipeline to help them make decisions about what to move forward. And so it's just this very like internal company decision making. Some companies, I think, are running them in tandem to try to build up their case and understand what kind of information they can get from them, but they're still doing the animal studies because that is what they believe the FDA wants to see.
And is that true? That's what the FDA wants to see?
Well, I can't speak for the FDA, but I will say that the whole regulatory landscape around this has a lot of opportunity for improvement. The FDA, I think if you talk to the FDA, they would say that they can accept whatever they want and that they want companies to submit data from animal use. So the issue from non-animal methods or from tissue chips. So the issue is that we want, of course, these new approaches to be at the point where they are accepted in lieu of the animal study, not in addition. The FDA has many regulations and guidance documents that it uses to govern drug development and that companies are going to look to when they are mapping their plans for how to get their product to move through the drug development pipeline and ultimately be accepted. And so you have the regulations and the guidance, which both are either mandating or favoring animal studies. Now, I think, so a recent FDA publication described FDA's regulations as being flexible so that in vitro or animal studies could be submitted. I think that is true of some of FDA's regulations. Some are flexible so that a company could use an animal test or an in vitro approach, but some are not. And none of them account for computer methods. And so we have been working to try to get FDA to update those regulations because we think it's a really important part of confidence in using new approaches. And then also just innovation. When companies see that the FDA has updated its policies around this, I think there'll be a lot more. There's already a lot, but I think there'll be even a lot more attention and momentum to do this work.
Well, sure, because if you're a company and you think, well, maybe the FDA is okay with this, not using animals, but we're not sure, right? And you're spending millions and millions of dollars on whatever the drug is, you want a backup plan, right? That's kind of how it's going right now. Mm-hmm. And so they need to shift regulations. Like, how does it change to the point where everybody's using organ on a chip instead of an animal?
Well, you know, organ on a chip is just one.
Right.
But,
for example.
Yes, of course. There's a lot that needs to happen. So I think policy change is just one aspect. I think scientific support is another, and then training and outreach are another. But I do think that there are so many reasons that we need better methods that as these factors are addressed, I think companies are really going to start using them more. Roche is a company that's based in Switzerland, but they're a global pharmaceutical company. They just last week, I believe it was, announced that they are launching an Institute of Human Biology. And the whole purpose on doing it is to focus on and create more reliable and predictive methods that can better emulate the human body and then to use them in their product development. And so you have companies doing things like that. And so the companies are understanding we are putting a lot into developing new drugs. And if we don't do things differently, we're going to continue to be in this space. And, you know, the space that I'm referring to is we have about 10,000 human diseases, only about 5% have cures. And so this means that people with diseases are left to manage those just the best ways that they can. And sometimes that is with medications. the time to develop a new treatment is about 10 to 15 years. And so it takes a really long time. And in that process, 9 of 10 promising therapeutics that enter clinical trials are going to fail. So these are investigational medicines that in animal studies indicated a degree of safety and efficacy, but they end up failing in humans, mostly because they're found to be unsafe or they don't work in treating human disease. Because there's differences in physiology and biology between species that really can change what the body does with the drug and what the drug does to the body. And there's a big concern that continuing to use animals for much of our research and development of products that are intended for humans is going to continue to pump out unsafe and ineffective medications in this very expensive and time-consuming process. And then also, what about the safe and effective therapies that are getting screened out in animal studies that would have been useful for humans? And then there's these huge costs around it too. So it's about $2.6 billion to bring a new therapeutic to market. So it's a very expensive process. It has a lot of inefficiencies, and a lot of those costs are due to failures. And so I think companies, for all those reasons, companies want to do things differently. But FDA also is now, we're at this different point where FDA is doing a lot to make change, and it's coming from Congress too. And so you have all the players, you have the reasons to make the change, you've got all the players saying, okay, it's time to do it. Now it's just a matter of time, I think, as we work through these issues. Like, what do the policies say, and how do they need to be changed so that they are flexible for new methods to be integrated? Where is the science? Where there are approaches that exist that have been shown to be better for humans, let's get them in use. And where we need more developed, let's make sure that our funding goes there. And then the training and outreach, which is so important, give people the skills to understand how to use these methods, and then understand the data that comes from the methods as well.
In the 8 years you've been at PCRM, does it feel like now all of a sudden things are really starting to open up and change?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think it was a few months back, I read an article where the FDA was quoted, and they described right now as a tipping point. And I have been feeling the same. To me, it feels like we are at this tipping point in toxicology where things are really shifting. The writing's on the wall. People know we need to do better for all the reasons that I've listed. And now it's just a matter of getting there. And these things, unfortunately, take time, and they take a lot of creativity and perseverance, but I think we're going to get there.
It seems like even as just somebody who's watching this space, that recent times, things have really just shifting in a big way. And it feels like people, like the general public, is more against animal testing now than they ever have been.
We are a society that cares about animals. You know, we, even if you have somebody who doesn't necessarily have a huge heart for animals, they certainly don't want to see them suffer and die. But we have really given science a hall pass for a long time to just allow brutal things to happen to animals. Now, more and more, I think people are willing to say, no, that's not okay. And the fact that science is on our side just makes it that much better.
Yeah, it's really cool. Thank you, Elizabeth. This has been, it's really exciting. It's great. It's positive. You know, like, it's just.
Well, I'm a real optimist.
Yeah.
So
no, I know.
There's a lot of work to do.
No, I know.
I don't mean to mislead.
And there's like 100 million animals being tested on right now in America, something like that. And so it's not like the numbers are going down yet.
But when you are doing the work, you have to stay positive. You have to reevaluate what a win is, because you are up against these. You're up against the way it's been done for decades, and you are up against people who have spent decades doing just terrible things to animals. You are up against just so much inertia in terms of how companies are set up to do animal testing. The educational systems, so much of PhD programs are centered around animal testing. So there's just so much inertia keeping it from moving. But it yet, even with all of that, it is still moving away from animals, not as quickly as I would like, or, you know, I think most of us would like, but it's happening. And so I really do believe it's only a matter of time before non-animal methods really are central to decision-making for drug development, especially.
Thank you so much for this. This is like, it's really, it is so exciting. Like, it feels like on so many levels with all the bad animal stuff, like between cultivated ag and the technology is finally getting to the point where it's going to win and save everybody. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Despite all the reasons, like despite all the inertia in the world set up against it.
Yeah.
Good science is prevailing and we are moving away from animal use.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
To learn more about Elizabeth and to learn more about the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.